Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Movies and booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
It is time for Movies and Booze. Linda Coogan, Ali Ryan and Brian Lloyd are with us once again. Good afternoon to you all.
Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. Linda, tell us. What are those two bottles in front of you?
They have little bibs on them.
Yeah, why have they little bibs on
them? They have little bibs on them because they are the National Off-Licence Gold Star award-winning wines. That was only launched, released last week. And I've been a judge on that panel for the last 15 years. And these were released as the best Old World white and red wine of the year. So they're both Spanish and we're celebrating Eat the Spain and Drink the Spain at the same time at the moment all over October. So it's great to see Spanish. I brought a little bit of Spanish Manchego for you.
The smell of it is lovely.
It's delicious. Yeah. Because the white, it's a little bit different. It's kind of, it's a grape called Viura. It's a white Rioja, which people are not really used to. You hear Rioja and you think red. Mm. And the red is delicious. It's, you said, Brian, it's like Ribena, but it's
alcoholic Ribena. Yeah, I'm clearly unqualified to make that like Ribena, like Jesus.
Very easy.
Thanks for saying that, by the way. Cheers.
That's okay, no problem.
Appreciate it. Jesus.
So but yeah, people do say that sometimes.
Do they really?
Yeah, it's one of the, because you know the way it's hard to describe wine, and it's like smells like wet dog, as Tomás Clancy once famously said on the show. You know, but it's kind of evocative rather than.
Yeah, that's it. It was the most familiar smell I could point to. Yeah. Okay, right. I felt bad about it. Okay, that's good.
And Linda, when you're judging these things, how many people are judging?
So it's actually broken down into groups. And so myself and a lady from an off-license, we have to have minimal qualifications of like a diploma or a Champagne Academy member. And we taste them in pairs. We have to agree. So there could be 12 or 15 wines in front of you. You have to narrow it down to the top three. And then a second lot of judges come in and pick the top three from each of the categories and re-judge them.
Right.
So Jean Smullen would be on the second level of, you know, coming in to assess
and,
our...
Is he involved?
And is it, can you have disagreements?
Yes. No, we would do, but we have to actually go, right, this, and you can't bring your personal favourite style into it. You have to be really, really objective and go, right, what is this like?
Yeah.
It's not for me, but it's a really good quality wine for its price point.
Yeah.
And all different categories.
The Champagne Academy sounds great.
How many points do you need to get into that? I know. There's a girl, Sinead McCarthy, and Mariana, they've gone and done it this year, two people from Ireland. So they're lucky girls after going over to Champagne. You need your Rennie for sure, drinking that much champagne. But it's amazing experience.
First real problem.
I know, yeah. Look, hello. We'll bring champagne in next time. Right?
Oh, God. Yes, yeah. Barreling in the Rennie. Okay, another one there. Right, so the two movies today, Good Boy and A House of Dynamite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Good Boy is set from the perspective of a dog. But it's a haunted house horror movie, but it's basically told through the eyes of the dog, which is, you know, so such a great concept, never been done before, and done quite well in this. And then the other one is about the end of the world. Essentially, a nuclear missile is about to hit Chicago, and the film is told over 30 minutes from when it's launched to when it's going to hit, but from different perspectives. So like the first 30 minutes of the movie, it's in the White House Situation Room. The next 30 minutes, the clock starts back to zero, and it's, you know, told from the perspective of these Air Force people that are trying to shoot the missile down. And then the next 30 minutes is from the Secretary of Defense, and then the next 30 minutes is from the President. So yeah, terrifying.
There's a movie called Failsafe.
Yes.
Yeah, which sounds kind of similar to
similar
that.
Buzz, but this is done a lot. And like, you know, like you could even talk about like The Day After from the 80s or Threads, you know, the BBC one. But this is more sort of like in the room as it's happening, and it not done for laughs or yucking it up or even kind of heightened in any kind of way. Like, I mean, it's obviously not going to be Doctor Strangelove, you know, but this is more the plausibility of it is what makes it so terrifying. And the fact that, you know, and I don't think I'm giving this away, but like, everyone is really super competent. Everyone knows what they're doing, but they can't stop it. Like, the inevitability of it is what makes it terrifying. No one can stop it. It's going to happen. And they're all like running around like headless chickens trying to make it stop. So like, you think now, like, the bozos that are running the US government now, the hell are they going to do if this happens? Like, you know, that sort of way. So that's what makes it even more scary.
Okay,
I guess.
So yeah.
Cheery stuff.
Cheery stuff. That's very comforting. Right. There might be, now, is there definitely going to be an Ocean 14, or is George Clooney said,
Sounds definite now, because he's actually saying in interviews that it is bankrolled and that it's starting to shoot in 2026. So yeah,
okay.
Ocean's 14, Ocean's 11 was in 2001, which makes me feel very old, because I remember that coming out. And obviously in the interim, we've had Ocean's 8, which was a bit of a reboot that was all female. So we had Sandra Bullock in that, we had Cate Blanchett, we had Rihanna, Anne Hathaway, Sarah Paul. So my hope, and I think a lot of critics hope maybe, is that maybe they'll all blend in together, because George is saying that Matt Damon, Julia Roberts, he wants them to come back. So will we see a mixture of all of them coming back? I have to say, I have loved every Ocean's movie. There's not one of them I would say, nah. I even loved the all-female reboot of it, because I wasn't sure how that was going to go. And every time I think of an Ocean's movie, I just think of Brad Pitt eating. There's so many shots of him eating food, and it always makes me hungry, but it's always shot so, so well. And no matter what goes on in the plot, I love it. So I would love if they went back to Vegas for this one. I just feel like that OG one was brilliant. But in the middle of all this, which is kind of annoying me a little bit, is that Margot Robbie is planning an Ocean's prequel. So before all of this started, going back to the original, so the original Ocean's 11, which Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin, like the original Rat Pack, started in, was in 1960. She wants to do a movie back to that time. That's how she's pitched it. And now apparently Bradley Cooper has come on board as well. So her and Bradley have been friends for years. Apparently they've been trying to work, and they've attached Twister's director Lee Isaac Chung. So that is apparently happening in the next 2 years as well. So I don't love that. I don't like when that happens.
Well, let's wait and see what happens. But is she going to remake the original 60s movie?
That's how it's been pitched.
Okay, so it isn't like Ocean's 10.
No. It's like a pitch of before it all begins. So how they all got together, the original. Because the other way in the movies, you do kind of see little flashbacks of kind of how they met or whatever. This is like the original story of how the Rat Pack kind of got together. She's basing it in 1960. So it's going to basically be back then, which I do think would be really cool. And Margot Robbie's proved herself now that she is unreal at bringing the universe to life. So I think it'd be good. But I'm more excited about the Ocean's 14. I mean, I don't know how much longer they can go back and remake them, like with George and Brad and that. They're getting on now. They're not going to be climbing buildings anymore. So I'm interested to see who they're going to bring on. But I do think it's a really good idea, and I would definitely go and see it.
14 stars, though. I mean, that's how do they do that? Do they
cut
down everyone's part, or just make the film 7 hours long?
I think they'll just bring in Sandra Bullock and Cate Blanchett's character. I don't think we're going to have Rihanna coming back. Maybe Kate, Anne Hathaway and Rihanna. And for some reason, because, you know, she played Danny's sister in the movie. Sandra Bullock did. She was his sister. So I don't know. I'm interested to see how they do it. But he normally only would kind of hint at something. He has said now it's bankrolled. Like, it's happening. There's just no specific cast just yet, but he had said Brad, Julia and Matt are all interested in coming back.
Okay, and it's going to be a movie rather than
definitely
Apple
a movie
TV
definitely a movie job. Yeah. Whereas we don't know with Margot Robbie's one, that could end up being on a streamer, but definitely it's Warner Brothers who are going to make the new Ocean's 14.
Okay, we shall see, I suppose. Right, so tell us about first wine.
López Tajaro Rioja Reserva. How about that?
Keep going, yeah.
Keep going. Yeah.
Okay, so this is a Rioja Reserva in a Blanco, a white. Sticking your nose into this, Ali, what are you thinking here?
I actually don't like white wine, but I have to say this smells amazing.
Okay, you don't like white wine at all?
No, not at all. Only champagne, sadly. Champagne and Prosecco. I don't like white, but I can take in a white and know that it's good. Kind of what you're saying with the judging earlier on. I wouldn't drink it, but so, I've done a few press trips to the odd vineyard, so I've kind of learned how to smell them.
Okay, lovely. Yeah. So this one, it's quite deep in colour.
Yeah.
So that's because it's got 18 months in French and European oak barrels. So it gives texture and body and richness to the wine. That's why I brought in some Manchego, because some people might find that this is a little bit too nutty or a little bit too marzipan or something like that, because there's lots of layers going on with this. It's not really one for sitting back and having Dancing with the Stars on and just enjoying a glass. For me, this is more of your cheese board with your charcuterie and all the gorgeous cheese, but also like a roast chicken dinner, all the buttery mash and creamy, rich buttery dishes, risotto, things like that. But what I was shocked with, how fresh it is at the end. So it's quite textured and rich and ripe and full body, gorgeous flavours, but it's fresh finish. It's only 12.5% alcohol. Whereas something like that, you'd actually expect to be much richer and heavier. So that is my absolute favourite little pick. And it was a gold star winner. Lopez, the Haro Rioja Reserva. They do have a level down, which is not a Reserva. Mm. If people want less oaky notes and buttery and all that.
But, how rare is a white Rioja?
Do you know what? It's becoming more and more popular, and not necessarily just this oak style, but I did a wine dinner last night in McHugh's in Raheny, and we did a white Rioja as well. We did two white Riojas, and one had no oak whatsoever, stainless steel tanks, really, really fresh, competing with Albarino from Spain. And then the second one was absolutely amazing. Again, that was a winner last year of White of the Year, a Spanish Conde Valdemar. Beautiful, really rich, ripe, and really nutty. Again, we had that with croqueta, like beautiful ham on and the cheese bechamel. Blah, blah, amazing.
All the
absolutely
Spanish
amazing. you're going to find this in good national off licenses around the country. Bradley's in Cork had that for Fionnuala, in case she was here.
Sorry, Ali.
I have to always mention Cork when Fionnuala's here. You can get it in Martin's, in McHugh's, in Nude Wines, in Wine Online, and all the independent off license around the country as well.
Okay, good stuff. What movie would you like to do for us, Brian?
House of Dynamite, I guess.
Okay, House of Dynamite, exploding after this break.
Everyone you love, everyone you know, everyone you ever heard of lived out their lives on a mote of dust suspended in a sunbeam. Think of the rivers of blood spilled by all those generals and emperors, so that in glory and triumph they could become the momentary masters of a fraction of a dot.
Right, that's a House of Dynamite.
From the trailer. Yeah, it was Cosmos. Yeah.
Okay. So, a nuclear missile weapon is headed for where in the US?
Chicago.
Right.
Sea Town itself. It's going to be wiped off the face of the earth when this blast hits. This is directed by Catherine Bigelow, who previously did Zero Dark Thirty. She did The Hurt Locker. She's known for, you know, having very heavily researched, very plausible scenarios in her film. But what's interesting about this is the fact that, you know, this is very, very real. It's so plausible that you're watching it. It doesn't even give you the kind of the comfort blanket of being overly sort of dramatic.
Yeah.
Or the characters themselves are, you know, flawed or you know, incompetent in some kind of way. You know, that sort of, you can't even kind of hold on to that and say, well, this wouldn't happen. Like, everyone in this film, like from Rebecca Ferguson's character, almost up to Idris Elba, you know, who plays the president in this, they're all competent. They all know what they're doing. But what makes this so terrifying is the fact that no one can stop it. Like, there's a line in it that Anthony Ramos's character says, and I think I heard it on The West Wing before, but like, trying to shoot down a nuclear weapon with another missile is like trying to hit a bullet with another bullet.
Yeah.
Like, the odds of success are, you know, I think it's like 56% is what they say in the film. So there really is, if one gets fired, that's it. You've got a 50-50 chance of this thing working out, that, you know, no one dies. And even then, you know, there's still the possibility of like shrapnel, there's still the possibility that they'll fire another one. And like, the film opens with this, again, very plausible, very, very horrifying list of statistics where, you know, the inclination towards you know, demilitarization, denuclearization has ended. You know, post World War II and post Cold War, the idea of using nuclear weapons was considered unthinkable. That has now finished. It is now on the table. So you're going into this, knowing this, knowing Trump has access to nuclear, talked, you know, in his previous administration about nuking tornadoes to stop them from going around. So, like,
that's real science at work there. Don't diss that.
Listen, yeah, you know, diss that. Like, that's apparently a thing. But, you know, this idea that, you know, we are, and that's where the name of the film comes from, the idea that we are now living inside of a house of dynamite where the walls have just been packed with dynamite. We think everything's fine. We can't see them, but they're there, and all it's going to take is one spark to set this all off. And I mean, the film basically goes into this idea that, like, they don't even know who fired this missile. Like, in the 30 minutes that you see from each perspective, you know, they're on the phone to the Russians, and they're saying, the Russians are saying, well, we didn't fire this, and if you fire your missiles, we're going to fire our missiles, so you better think about, you know, not retaliating. And they obviously can't get the North Koreans on the phone because, you know, famously
they don't have phones
and they're known as the Hermit Kingdom and stuff like that. And the Chinese are saying, well, why would they do it? I mean, it's not in their interest to fire missiles either. And then it's like, okay, has some, you know, Russian submarine captain just lost the plot and decided to fire? Well, no, we can't really set that either because, you know, the Russians
or have, an American for that matter.
Or an American for that matter. And there you go. And that's, again, the thing of it is that, like, and that's another thing I would say about this film as well, is that, again, it doesn't even give you the comfort blanket of being one particular, you know, left-wing, right-wing, centrist, whatever. All the characters are just, they're technocrats, you know, that sort of way. They're just good at their job. They don't really care about the political persuasion. That doesn't come into it at all. So, again, you can't even rely on this and say, oh, this is a left-wing fantasy. Oh, this is a right-wing fantasy. No, this is, again, so plausible that it just makes it all the more terrifying. And again, the cast in this is fantastic. So you have Rebecca Ferguson. She plays the White House Situation Room commander. Jared Harris plays the Secretary of Defense. Like I said, Idris Elba plays the president. They're all really good at it. And when you see the white of their eyes, when you see, like, the perspiration on their foreheads, it looks real. Like, Tracy Letts plays this general who's the head of STRATCOM. And he walks in, you know, to the sort of the missile, the big room, I think they call it, the big board, it's called. And, like, he's got, like, a big, huge, like, one of these big gulp coffee mugs, and he's, like, talking about some baseball game or something like that. And he sits there and he's like, right, let's do this. And he's like, yeah, let's bomb him. And, like, this could happen because, you know, to them, this is just like dots on a board and all the rest of it, and they don't really care. But then by the end of his 30-minute segment, you know, these soldiers come out and say, yeah, we've got to take you to the bunker. And you see this moment of realization where he's like, oh, shit, this isn't just a game anymore. Yeah, this isn't just like war games where we're watching the things fire. This is actually happening. And he takes his stupid big gulp with him and walks away. And you're like, oh, Jesus. Like, it's even little moments like that of human realization that makes it, again, all the more terrifying because it's got such a good cast behind it, you know?
Yeah, so is the story arc really, what are we going to do about this rather than finding out you did
it? Oh, no, it's literally we're F-U-C-K'd. Yeah, that's it. Like, that's what this film is. It's like, if this happens, we're done.
Yeah.
We're not stopping this. Unless political leaders decide to, you know, roll back the clock on doomsday. And, like, this has happened before. I mean, famously, Ronald Reagan saw the movie the day after. It was broadcast, I think, on CBS or something like that. And after that film, it was a TV movie, and after that film was shown, they brought in a load of, like, scientists and physicists and all the rest of it. And they had this, like, roundtable discussion about how accurate the film they just saw was.
Mm.
And Reagan saw this. And then the next day he was like, right, okay, SALT is happening. That was the Strategic Arms Limitation Treaty.
Yeah,
they all kicked off. And the day after was cited as the turning point for this. So, like, you know, considering how Trump is so TV-oriented and stuff like this, but he has the attention span of a goldfish, I don't think he's going to see this and suddenly think, oh God, we're going to have to stop this. But hopefully someone will see this in a position of power and have some kind of realization to how terrifying this is and how plausible this all is and how, if it doesn't, if someone doesn't kind of pull back, this is going to happen.
This kind of reminds me of Contagion, because it was like
very similar.
Oh, I'd be so terrified if it happened. And when you watch it, you're like, God, this could happen, and then it literally
and
did
then it literally
happen.
Did happen. Like,
yeah,
and
yeah.
Again, what was so terrifying about Contagion was that it pretty much played out exactly as like you had,
and everyone was very intelligent in that too, and everyone knew exactly what should be done but couldn't do it.
And then you had like, you know, like influencers and like, you know, like a citizen journalist like Jude Law's character in Contagion being like, oh, it's all fake. It's under Jesus, that happened.
Exactly. Yeah,
yeah. That's exactly what happened.
So, like, sounds really familiar. I'm scared now.
This is it. Like, oh no, Jesus, I was watching it. I was like, we are so F-U-C-K.
No, but there was in the 80s in the Soviet Union, there was a real documentary.
They talked about that, yeah.
Where they saw, or they thought they saw, a missile entering Soviet Union. And only for the grace of God, whoever was in charge of looking at this said, I'm not going to press a button here.
And that's where the song 99 Red Balloons comes from. That's right. Apparently it was a Soviet missile commander saw something on his radar screen and he was about to hit the fire and he thought, no, it's not. And then apparently someone reported it and it wasn't red balloons though. It was a flight of ducks apparently.
Yeah.
That looked like, that came up on the radar as missile.
I always thought that song was a happy song.
Supersonic ducks.
It wasn't supersonic ducks. Yeah. It was like some sort of flight of ducks and the pattern that was in looked like something. Yeah.
And the somebody's just texted in a line from 99 Red Balloons.
Yeah. Balloons.
It's a very talky film.
Talky. Yes. Very much like a chamber drama. You know, it's there when it's in the 30 minutes in that room, it's everyone just like on the phone talking to each other. When it goes to the bunker where they fired the kill vehicle to try shoot down the thing again, locked in a room, very much pressure cooker sort of thing. The only kind of segment of the film, like that sort of out in the open, if you like, is when it gets to Idris Elba's character, and it starts off and it's him at, you know, I think he's at an WNBA thing, but then it transfers to Marine One, and it's a very clever little bit of direction from Catherine Bigelow, whereas it starts off in the Situation Room and it's all about information. They're all trying to figure it out. They've got the big boards in the screen and everyone's like, is it the North Koreans? Is it the Russians? Get our experts on the phone. And the experts get on the phone and they're kind of discussing it. And then when it transfers then to the kill vehicle, to the bunker where they're shooting it down, the guy Anthony Ramos, like, he's in the middle of a breakup and he's trying to figure out how to get all the stuff out of his apartment, and you know what I mean, like, so it makes it kind of more human. But then when it gets to Idris Elba, you know, he's on the phone to his wife and he's all like, you know, oh God, I'm really tired, I just want to go home and get under bed and all the rest of it. But then when it transfers to when he gets onto the Marine One, it's literally him and the naval officer with the codes, and he's like just looking at it, and it's again the room is smaller and smaller in each different segment, so it literally comes down to one person who's like, I'm going to bomb them or I'm not going to bomb them. And he's literally looking at a folder full of plastic like sheets, where it's like, okay, if we bomb Moscow, 30 million people are gonna die. If we bomb Pyongyang, he's literally like, give me a minute here, I gotta think about this. Mm-hmm. But that's literally where it comes, that's again the plausibility of it. It's one person with a button saying yes or no, I'm going to kill millions of people. So that's how, again, that's the plausibility of it. That's the terrifying nature of it.
Okay, right. And this is in cinemas from?
This is in cinemas now. It'll be on Netflix from October 24th. I would recommend going to see it in cinema, because there is that thing of you need to be trapped in a room with this film to really kind of get the experience of it. But yeah, it's definitely worth seeing in the cinema.
Okay, good stuff. Now, these Beatles movies they're making, it's almost exclusively an Irish cast at
this
point.
I know. Obviously, it's great news that Saoirse Ronan is now going to be playing Linda McCartney in the Beatles biopic, which, just to remind everyone, is a four-film cinematic event, is how it's been described. Sam Mendes directing. So there's four movies where we're going to see the same story told from each of their different perspectives. But there has been backlash that a lot of the main characters are Irish. So Paul Mescal is playing Paul McCartney. Barry Keoghan is playing Ringo Starr. So there has definitely been a little bit of back and forth, and that's why I'm surprised they've gone for another Irish person. But Linda McCartney is obviously from New York, so we're not taking it away from the British. But we do have another Irish cast member. Now, it does obviously just go to show how incredible the Irish just talent is, I think. Mm. I don't think it matters that they're all from Ireland. They just all happen to be from Ireland. So she'll obviously be playing alongside Paul Mescal, who's playing Paul McCartney. They are very good friends in real life. They did start together in a movie before called Defoe, though, which did not really go
well. Oh, yeah, that was a bit of a grim one.
Bit crap.
It was like a 5 out of 10 for most critics. Yeah. And it was kind of sad because I actually think them as actors should be really good on screen together. So I'm excited that they get another chance to play out a love story. Obviously, like Hamnet that's coming up, he's meant to be incredible at that with another Irish person, Jesse Buckley. So I think this is maybe a bit of a redemption for them because the two of them should be brilliant on screen. And I just thought that movie went down. Like, I don't know why lead balloon is in my head now. Balloons are just in my head.
Yeah, a red lead balloon.
It's just there now. Yeah. But yeah, this is backed by Apple and the Beatles estate. So it's important to remember that. So John Lennon's estate and George Harrison's estate, which means that a lot of people are presuming there's going to be like unheard material maybe showing up in this movie, or that it's going to be very, at the very, very least, very authentic to what the life was like at the time. And Linda as well, no one knows how much she's going to be in the movie or not. And I presume she's mainly only going to be in Paul Mescal's movie, so the John Lennon section of it. But she was a photographer, a musician, an animal rights activist. She also was his bandmate in Wings, the band after the Beatles. So like, there's a long story there for her, and it's Saoirse Ronan. I mean, like, she's an incredible actress. I'd love to see if there's a bigger story, but I have a feeling we're going to start seeing casting now for all of the other halves, and that they're probably not all of them though. Yoko still hasn't been announced yet.
There was a name like Mia McKenna Bruce is going to play Maureen Starkey. I know that, so she's going to be.
Yeah,
that.
I think it's Yoko that's left.
Yeah,
but my feeling with it is that they're mainly only going to appear in each other's own standalone movies, because I don't know how they're going to fill the gap, because the movies are the exact same just from different perspectives.
Yeah.
So I'm presuming that the relationship is going to be one of the standalone differences within each movie.
Is this thing worth 4 movies?
Yeah, so I don't know.
Like, Amy Lee Wood is going to be playing Patty Boyd. So, well, again,
hasn't
been confirmed, but she's set to play it. But like, I mean, the story of Patty Boyd, have you ever read her book? Like, it's incredible. Like, I mean, the life that she
married two of the most famous musicians in the world. I
you
mean,
could make a film about
legend,
her.
Alone. I know,
but that's what's hard about it, though. It's like, how much are they going to go into their stories? Because the 4 movies do have to mirror each other in some way. I do love Sam Mendes. Like, one of my favorite movies of all time is Revolutionary Road. Like, I do think he's an incredible director, but I don't know if I would sit through 4. And I think what they're trying to do is create this kind of what do they call the Barbie Oppenheimer thing?
Barbieheimer.
Cinematic
trying
event.
To get everyone to go out. Like, 4 movies are probably going to be 2.5 hours each. It's a lot.
They're doing them week as the release plan I heard was that they're going to do it like it's week 1, week 2, week 3, week 4.
Now, obviously, they're starting to film in 2026. But if you've been watching just any news sites of any of the actors, they're all fully in the hairstyles now, which I love to see. Yeah. They all were at Joseph Quinn or Harris Dickinson's movie premiere a couple of weeks ago, and you could see Barry's hair is fully Ringo Starr. I've heard that like Paul is like really learning how to play the guitar, like genuinely with his wrong hand and all sorts of stuff. Like, they are going like really, really into it. But it's a huge task for Sam Mendes. Like, it could be absolutely a failure. My only hope is that the estates are involved, so surely it's not going to be. But it's a high risk one. Mark, like,
but if the estates are involved, that means nobody comes out of this too bad.
That's true.
No, yeah, you know.
I remember thinking that about Bohemian Rhapsody. Like, I did love it, but there was an Elton John's one. I loved both of them, but there was a few where I was like, you kind of skipped past those really bad things that happened there. Yeah. Why hasn't that been mentioned? You know?
To be fair, like, Elton John was open about the fact that he was like off his face for most of the 70s, like, and was a terrible person while he was doing it. Like,
fair
and
enough.
Which made it the better film than Bohemian Rhapsody. Like, John Lennon was, you know, not a good dude. Like, he was pretty dark and, you know, intense in certain places. Like, so I don't know how, I take your point. Like, I would agree
and
with
then,
that.
And then, you know,
how are they going to do this?
When Oscar season comes around, are they all going to be up for Best Actor? Because there's 4 films. Like, I have so many questions about it. Maybe they will. Like, how is that? Like, I'd say the egos between the 4 of them, how are they going to manage it? Because one movie is going to be better than the other 4. That's what's going to happen.
Sure,
one of those actors, and I'd say it's probably going to be Barry or Paul.
I know. Yeah, it'll be that film was ruined because Yoko was in it. Sounds kind of familiar, really.
Exactly.
You are listening to the Moncrief Show and News Talk. You have to take a break after that. More movies and booze.
Lager Historia. This is the red wine of the year, the wine of the year by the National Off License Association. It's an organic Garnacha, which is also Grenache in French. And this is what they say about it on the back, right? Lager Historia is a long story, so don't ask. We had to go to great lengths to find this wine, but after much searching, we believe we have struck the right balance of fruit and intensity with this vibrant, strawberry-filled Garnacha. Like every good story, it lives long in the mouth and has a superb finish. Isn't that cute?
Yeah.
Anyway, so we were saying Ribena, but when you stick your nose in, you know, an Ethan Mess dessert with the raspberry coulis and all that you get on, that is what's bursting out of the glass for me. Oh my God. I would love this again, charcuterie, even a tuna steak or something like that, or chicken with a marsala sauce.
Bit of pavlova on the side.
Bit of pavlova on the side, yeah.
I meant to eat fish with red wine.
Oh, no, you can do what
depends.
You want.
Of course
you
can. Okay.
It's not very Ribena-ish. This is as dry as a bone.
So it's got the nose and aromas of really vibrant fruit, but it's dry. Mm. But it has low, low, low tannin, which means you can chill this wine and you can also serve it with fish.
Why are you saying this to me?
Because you're wasting your words.
I just think that chilling red wine is almost a criminal offence.
Any red that is low tannin like that, you can. We did it last night at a wine dinner. Really? We served cod with chorizo and chickpea, and we had a Rioja, a light Rioja, and it was delicious, slightly chilled, not freezing like.
Yeah.
But if you go to all these countries that are hot,
I know when I was in Italy a couple of weeks ago, someone tried to serve me and my friend, and he actually is a wine connoisseur, a cold red wine. It did not go down well. It was sent back.
Cold is too much.
It was cold. It was like refrigerated.
Oh, okay. That's probably too much.
So Mick O'Connell, who would be on the show before he moved to UK, he's a master of wine, and he says he pops all of his reds in the fridge for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I remember you saying that, because some whites are chilled too much.
Because it takes away the taste. Served chilled.
I nearly have my red wine near a radiator. Like, that's how warm my red wine.
Because that can turn it to gack.
Then it's like too alcoholic and gloopy.
If it's anyway cold, I move it towards the heat. I just can't.
But I'm wrong, so I know this today. Well, you don't like it, Brian, because you don't.
At the first sip, I was like, "Do I?" And then the finish was actually lovely, so I do like it. Yeah.
So Larga Historia Organic Garnacha, and what's interesting about this is that they got the whole bunches of grapes and they layered them like this moule foulée. I'm going to say that real quick.
They
layer it on top of crushed grapes to give it kind of a really vibrant note. So they layer it over and over. It's a little bit of a different way to make wine. It gives it really, really fresh, crunchy fruit, which I adore. So the usual suspects, all the National Off-License members will have this wine because it's the wine of the year. Also available nude and wine online as well.
Yeah, okay. And what's the ABV on that one?
13.5.
13.5? That's quite respectable. That's nice. It's not going to knock you down or anything like that.
We're very sophisticated.
What happens at a wine dinner anyway?
Well, last night, for example, it was fabulous. 50 people in a room. And the Spanish-inspired menu with Irish ingredients in McHugh's of Rohini. And I got up, talked about Rioja a little bit, the brand, and tell them about the food, why we picked the wine. We had to do a sample dinner, of course, really hard work. And I got to taste the wines with the chef.
One dinner or you just have like...
It's one dinner with like five courses. Job. So like we had gazpacho with a white, then we had... the cod with chorizo.
Sounds like Six by Nico. You know, you can do the wine pairing there. The cocktail pairing where like it actually pairs exactly with the ingredients of the dish, which I find wild, but I love that.
It's great.
But I've done that and like there was 9 different courses. We got to the point like we were 7 in going, when will this end?
I know.
Please, you know.
Especially when they're giving you new cocktails as well. Yeah. My poor friend was like, I'll try. You don't have to drink it all.
Don't fill it up.
But then your table's full of like whiskey sour.
Whiskey sour. Wow, that's
the last time I was there, that's what was on the menu, yeah.
Oh my gosh. Right, so tell us, there's going to be a new Minecraft movie.
I know.
I suppose the last one was really successful, in fairness.
So successful. It's so funny because out of the Warner Brothers slate in recent years, Minecraft has been one of the most successful, as in like better ratings than the F1 movie, than Superman. So it brought in $957 million.
Yeah.
Only cost $150 to make, so obviously like massive, massive return. The director's returning again. They've already released the date, 23rd of July 2027, for anyone listening who has kids that loved that movie. Jack Black, who played Steve in it, is supposed to be coming back, same as Jason Momoa, the two main cast members. So it was released in April 2025, so it's very quick to be moving back to the second one, but when you have that much money coming in, you know, how can you not? It's funny though, like I've definitely, in inverted commas, seen this movie but could not tell you the plot. Like my nephews always have it on in the background. It really reminds me of that fake movie in the studio, you know, Kool-Aid, where it's like they're just doing it for the money, but fair play to them. The other thing to mention though is
the very first Simpsons movie, right, which was about $536 million, did really well. That came out in 2007. The Simpsons 2 is also coming out on the 23rd of July, 2027.
Yeah, one of them will
blink. So people are wondering now,
which will be the
other, because the original Simpsons movie just blew it out of the water. And $536 million back in 2007, it's probably going to be close to $1 billion now. So they're both being released on the exact same day. So I'd be interested to see how that goes. But regardless, Minecraft is just doing so well. And the way they actually put up the announcement was like, you know, I'm so bad at the images of it, but it's like building terrain. And it was an image of one of the little building blocks.
Yeah.
I still could not tell you the plot. There is no plot in the game either. So
it doesn't matter. Yeah, it doesn't matter. We better swiftly move on to our second movie. It is Good Boy. Here's a clip.
Come on, bud. Let's go. Come on, scaredy pants. Oof. It's not that bad. Come on, buddy. You coming on or not?
Here we go.
Okay. This way. Come on.
There you go. That's so obviously, as you were saying earlier, this is all entirely from the dog's point of view.
Yeah, Indy the dog.
Is it animated or is it
a real dog? No, it's real. No, it's a real dog. It's Indy the dog. It's the director's dog. He literally just, and like, and you see the behind the scenes footage of it as well. Like, to get the dog kind of whimpering or looking a little bit scared or looking in a particular direction, you see the behind the scenes. He's literally got his little squeaky toy and he's like squeaking him to get him to look that way. Or like, you know, when the ears are kind of twitching, like you can just see him off in the corner just kind of like either whistling for him or something like that. But then, you know, of course, when they have the lighting, when they have the music, when they have the kind of the slow zoom in on the dog as his ears are twitching, that all then kind of compounds to give it a sort of the horror feel, you know, in that sort of way. Like, this is really, it's such a great concept. It's one of those things that's like, I'm surprised they didn't make it sooner. The idea of, you know, if you have a dog, and my Eddie is the same as well. He will literally sometimes look over in a corner and just be staring at it for about 5 minutes. I was like, what is he looking at? Does he see something that we don't see? Or he'll start barking out the window and there's no one going by.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of way. And like, it is in history that dogs, you know, have been humans' protectors since cavemen. One of the first cave paintings, it was humans and dogs working together. The Romans had burial rites for dogs. You know, they found mosaics of, you know, headstones for dogs. So this idea that humans and dogs have been together for centuries, and that dogs can see more than humans can, they can smell more than, that does play into it as well. But this is really kind of an allegory for the idea of not being able to process grief. The dog knows something terrible has happened, but he can't figure out what it is.
Ah.
And he sees shapes and he sees kind of different things coming for his master. And he's trying to bark at it and he's trying to get the master's attention, but he can't get it because we don't really understand. The dog doesn't understand what he's seeing.
Oh, no. So this isn't like the sixth sense for dogs. He's actually dead himself.
No. It's not like that. No. Right.
I thought you were going to say the dog is evil. This is a better story than I thought.
No. And, like, and this is, the dog doesn't get harmed in it at all. Okay. Like, the dog is fine. All the rest of it. But that's the thing, isn't it? Like, when you see a dog on screen, I mean, I always have a problem with this, that when you put a dog on screen, that's emotional manipulation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because automatically, I'm going to be terrified that this dog is going to get hurt or he's going to be scared or they're not going to be able to help him.
Their senses are mad. Even my sister, whenever she's been pregnant, her dog is like
very protective,
sat beside her every second. Like, how do they know these things? Like, there's so many videos on TikTok you can find as well of like dogs knowing that their mom is about to give birth.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Ali, in this tidal wave of anthropomorphism, but that's all the time we have for. Thanks to Linda, Ali, and Brian.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.